Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Welcome back. It's 12 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and I'm glad you're here. My website is www.smallbusinessadvocate.com. Thank you to all of you who've been using it to your little heart's content. You've been using the heck out of our website, and we like it. We like it when you do that because that means that you're excited about your business. You want to get smarter. You want to learn some things. You want to learn new best practices and get some tips and some skills, and we do our best to provide those for you here through our Brain Trust members and keep you up to date on what's going on out there in the world. We do all that Monday through Friday, but you can also get all that stuff on our website 24/7 on demand, including our shows, including all the interviews, and we've got archives going back six and seven years. So check those out when you get a chance. And don't forget to subscribe to my free newsletter and check out the blog, which you can also subscribe to. Joan Pride is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Joan, welcome back to the show.
Hi there, Jim. Thank you.
It's good to have you back. Hey, Joan.
Thank you. Yes.
On this day in 1871.
Oh, here we go.
The great state of Delaware. By the way, we had one of their great governors on the show earlier this week, Governor Pete DuPont.
Oh, yes.
On the
I
show
remember
too.
Him.
He's a good friend of ours, and he was on the show a couple of days ago. Anyway, I wish I'd known this. I would have asked him about this. On this day in 1871, the great state of Delaware enacted the first fertilizer law. Now, that's all it says here. That's all I got, folks. I don't have anything else. It just leads me... But the good news is it leaves me to interpret what that means.
Oh, no.
And I wonder, Joan, if the first fertilizer law didn't have something to do with politicians. What do you think?
I mean, in terms of the things they talk about?
Spreading or... too much fertilizer around.
I guess that's a possibility.
What do you think? I mean, why else would there be a fertilizer law?
If that's what a fertilizer law is, maybe we need a new one?
We need more fertilizer laws.
I think we do.
I think there needs to be a federal fertilizer law. What do you think?
I agree.
It's been too long, Joan. 1871, what is it, 136 years or 135 years or something like that? We need another fertilizer law, folks, so we'll have to work on that. Joan, first up in the Kiplinger letter this week is this headline. Civil war in Iraq is just a breath away.
Right. We're saying they're pretty much on the verge, and we talk about the steps that need to be done as soon as possible to avoid all-out civil war.
I want you to talk about those steps in a second, but
yes.
I had last Friday, June Reed is our contact on the ground in Baghdad, and she joined us to give us another report on what's going on over there. As you know, June is one of those great Americans, Joan, who's in Iraq trying to help those people not fight the war, but to try to help them get their economy going so people can have jobs and so that these folks can prosper over there. And
given what's going on with hostage situations over there, she's very brave.
I'm so proud of her, Joan. I tell her that all the time. My audience knows that I do. I'm so proud of her. She's about to enter her second year, and she doesn't know if she's going to stay. She may actually stay as long as 3 years, another year after this one.
Wow.
And there are many others like her over there. These are the unsung heroes, among others, over there, Joan. But here's my point. On last Friday, she was saying that she thought civil war concerns were overblown, basically. I'm paraphrasing what she was saying. She did say it is dangerous here. It is getting, there is more violence right now. But she says she thought it was a little bit overstating it to say that they were about to go into a civil war. But the point I think that you guys are making, and I think that we all need to pay attention to, is that this is almost a day-to-day thing, isn't it?
Well, it sure is, because it sounds like they're finding, for example, more, you know, execution-style slayings that are going on over there in large numbers. And it's all, you know, back and forth retaliation. Pardon me?
87 one day this
week. Wow, yeah. And, of course, this all started, I guess, the precipitating event was, how long ago was it that the mosque was destroyed?
About a month ago.
That important Shiite mosque. And that really touched off a lot of this violence.
Yeah, you know, Joan, I have never said this to anybody else, but I'm going to say it right now. You know, I can see, it was a Shiite mosque, wasn't it?
Yes, I believe it was. Yes.
And the Iranians are Shiites, right?
Well, they are. Most of them are, but there's a Sunni minority.
Right, but
Iranians are
basically Shiites, as I understand it. But see, I could see certain Shiite interests. Maybe in other countries, maybe in Iran. I'm trying not to be too conspiratorial here, but I can see countries like that literally saying, you know what, this isn't, you know, we haven't gone far enough to get this thing out of control over there. Why don't we just blow up something that the other side will get blamed for? And that'll touch it off. I mean, I could.
Well, sure. In other words, that there are different factions have interests in destabilizing. Iraq.
Right.
Absolutely.
And beyond their interest in antiquity or any kind of religious symbols.
Yeah.
It wouldn't surprise me. I'm not saying this is what happened, Joan, but it wouldn't surprise me if we don't learn that the Iranians blew up the mosque.
Oh, interesting.
See.
Okay.
And I'm not saying that the Sunni insurgents didn't or wouldn't or couldn't have.
Right.
But I'm not. But it wouldn't surprise me, because we've got a lot of problems, and you guys point that out here. You talk about some of the other factions there. But before we get to that, Joan, the problem that's going on right now, Joan, is the leadership, the top leadership in Iraq, in the government in Iraq. They're having trouble getting the government to come together and form, aren't they?
That's right. And because of that, we're saying that the person who currently is the prime minister has to go. He is a Shiite. His name is Ibrahim al-Jafari.
Right.
And he's managed to alienate the other two factions, which are the Sunnis and also the Kurds, which I had forgotten to mention earlier.
Which is really pretty bad, because typically the Shiites and the Kurds have pretty much been on the same page, haven't they?
I think they have, yes, because during Saddam Hussein's reign, Sunnis, you know, were the top
Baathists.
Dogs and were oppressing the Shiites and the Kurds.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly right. They were the Baathists.
Yes.
So he didn't do himself any favors when he alienated the Kurds, which it seems to me that the Kurds, even though they're very, very nationalistic in their own terms of their own region, very, very parochial when it comes to their own region, they still seem to be among the most reasonable folks over there. And so we're going to talk a little bit more about this, and we're going to move over to the economy, see what's going on there right after these messages. It's 20 after. I'm Jim Blassingame. We're visiting with Joan Pride, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors.
Spinning at the mercy of an unrelenting force. So we stare into the emptiness and fall beneath the weight. Circling the nexus, and a fever dance with fate.
We're back. It's 23 after the hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. We're having a great visit with our good friend Joan Pride, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Joan, we're talking about the unstable political situation and security situation in Iraq. There's no question about it.
Right.
It's a dangerous place. It has gotten unstable. But you know, Joan, I think that we're at really what we call the break point, the tipping point, some people call it, and it can go either way. And I think in the next 20 minutes or the next 20 days, we're going to see more, we're going to discover more about what's at the heart of the Iraqi people than at any other time in this whole process, this multi-year process. I think in the next as I say, even as we speak or over the next month or so, we're going to see whether these people really, truly are capable of coming together and having a pluralistic society, which is based on laws, or if their fundamental disagreements over religion and class and et cetera, and maybe some of the memories that they can't get over, if that's going to be the overriding factor. What do you think?
Well, exactly. I think you're saying it very well, because maybe another way to say it is, are these the Iraqi people, or are they just a bunch of factions?
Yeah.
Can they come together and not just be factions?
Mm-hmm. And the good news, though, Joan, I mean to me, you know, whenever people, you know, talk about I'm not trying to take a side one way or the other here, but to me, they have been able to look over the edge and see some prosperity. Businesses are being built over there. June Reed, our contact over there, has told us about all the businesses. They've made thousands of small business loans. And of the thousands of loans, Joan, I think two have defaulted.
Wow.
How about that?
That's not bad.
Isn't that something? And when they went, in other words, I think the Iraqis can look around. I think they're in a position where they can look around, and if they look to one side, they see the turmoil, the violence, and maybe an interest in getting somebody that they don't like. They look to the other side and they see prosperity. They see organization. They see jobs. They see some kind of nice lifestyle, a better lifestyle for their families. And I think they're literally, you know, at a point where they can say, you know, do I want to turn left or do I want to turn right?
Right.
And Joan, as I was thinking about all these things, I was thinking about the United States about 140 something years ago.
Mm-hmm. Ah,
I mean, think about that. After 70 years, or 80 years, I should say, of building this country, we devolved into a civil war. I wonder what the rest of the world must have thought of us. Have you ever thought about that? What did France and England and Prussia and you know, whatever else, Mexico, whatever, what did they think about what was happening to us?
Well, one thing that just pops right into my mind is a lot of them may not have had the ability to think that much about us because they didn't have CNN. And I don't mean to be flip about it, but, you know, you can know everything about the whole world in an instant now, and because we have this global village now.
Right.
And
but they did know we were in a civil war. They got news. It took a while, but they did know.
Yeah.
They did know that we actually were in a civil war, and I mean, as you say, they might not have known, you know, what was happening at Gettysburg the next day, but they did know that we were in a war, and that the United States had basically been rent in two.
And I also wonder if they hoped it would be or hoped it would not be.
Exactly. And of course, there were some of those factions who were involved one way or the other. But anyway, I guess it's interesting to me to think about how hateful and ugly things can be in Iraq. But, you know, I was watching have you ever seen the movie Cold Mountain?
I've read the book.
Yeah, well, I haven't read the book. I saw the movie, and it's just an example of the ugliness of how human beings can be toward each other.
That's right.
And so anyway, and you know, the United States, nobody, you know, there was actually defeat was required. I mean, there wasn't people didn't say, well, you know, we've now changed our mind. There was actually defeat involved.
Right. That's
and
right.
And I don't think that's what's going to be part of the Iraqi thing. I don't think there's going to be a defeat. You know what I mean, from a military standpoint. I think it's going to have to be the minds are going to be changed or they're not going to be changed. What do you think?
Well, and it's also more complicated because you have more factions this
right.
time around as well.
And there's no battle line.
Right. Right.
You know, there is no
Mason-Dixon line.
That's exactly right. Or the line, you know, at on this hill or this river or whatever. It's a lot more complicated. But I just have to think that minds are going to have to, this is going to be an example where minds will be changed or not.
And I'm afraid there might be more deep-seated hatreds here, because I think in a lot of cases, although you had North versus South, there were a lot of families torn up, but they still respected each other.
That's exactly right. No, you're exactly right. Quick break, right back with Joan Pryor. We're going to move over and talk about the economy, and my prayers and my thoughts go out to the Iraqis. I hope they do the right thing, and I know, Joan, you agree with me. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Be like thunder. I don't know why they don't explode.
And now, back to a man who didn't let being named one of the 100 most important radio talk show hosts in America go to his head.
Woo! Woo! Yes! In your face!
He's Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate.
We're back. It's 34 after the hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, and I'm glad you're here. Joan Pryor is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Joan, I only want to say one last thing, and it's a thought that you guys about this Iraqi thing. It's a thought that you guys published in your letter this week, the Kiplinger letter. Your comment is neighboring countries would likely, if this devolved into a civil war, neighboring countries would likely be dragged into the conflict. Iran, Turkey, Saudi Arabia, and others to protect their interests. So, Joan, I think it's worth saying that it's in the interest of Earthlings, people who love freedom and who want freedom for themselves and for the Iraqis. It's in the interest of all of us to try to have good thoughts and maybe even say some prayers and to be encouraging whenever if we ever can be to the Iraqis, because that country could turn into a blooming democracy.
A conflagration, practically.
It could either be a blooming democracy that could export liberty in that region, or it could become a black hole. You know, with the gravity so dense, the gravitational pull so strong that it pulls into its conflict these neighboring countries.
Right.
It could go either way. And I say this to you off the air, and I wanted to say it on the air and get your thoughts quickly. And that is that I think that the day will come when you and I will read in a history book about what's happening even as we speak. And the history hasn't been written yet, but it is being written as we speak. And one of these days we'll see that they did the right thing, and the world went one way, or they did the wrong thing, and the world went the other way. I think that's where we are right now.
I think that's right, for good or for ill. We just don't know which it will be yet.
Right. But I do think that if folks believe that having good thoughts and saying prayers, if you believe those things have value, I would say that when you're thanking your higher power for your grandchildren, your children, and your blessings, you know, have a good thought for the Iraqis. Joan, let's move over and talk about the economy. Hiring February was out of control, wasn't it?
A little bit, almost 250,000 new jobs.
How about that?
Wow.
Annualized, Joan, that is like 2.8 million. I just did that in my head. How about that?
Wow.
It's like 2.8 million jobs in a year. When we actually, you don't take 1 month and annualize it.
Right.
But you guys had predicted earlier in the year, Joan, that the U.S. economy would grow like 1.9, I think, million jobs this year.
Yes. So this is like
1/8 of that.
And that could easily, in other words, we're easily on track to hit at least 1.9.
Right.
Even though it is early in the year, to be fair.
Exactly. Well, this is very interesting. So that's good news. But we've got some conflicting news, don't we? I mean, in some areas, the economy looks great, and in other areas, there are some danger signs. Long-term interest rates. What about that, Joan?
Oh, do we have to talk about interest rates?
I'm afraid so.
Okay. Well, we still don't know and have great news at this point. We're saying that they're going to creep higher, which is, I guess, better than going up quickly. But there's still lingering concerns about inflation, and you know the Federal Reserve is still gung-ho to make sure that inflation is stamped out.
Yeah, and you know all the signs are there, Joan. I mean, if Americans are hiring, if American businesses are hiring at this level, and they've got that many openings, and we continue to do that, we're starting to run out of hireable people. We're starting to run out of eligible people for 21st century jobs. We will be, and that means that. And a lot of people are predicting that wage pressures are going to be going up. There could be pressure, I should say, to push wages up, which is inflationary.
Exactly.
So that's something to think about. Joan, let's move down and talk just a little bit about real estate.
Okay.
You guys say condo inventories are up. That means there's a lot of unsold stuff out there.
Right. I'm not real concerned about this just because you had kind of a speculative bubble in a lot of markets last year. People just going nuts buying for the sake of buying so they could flip or turn them over quickly,
right.
Say within the year or even less.
Right. And so those people, that this is this for some people, this is like the folks who invested in the stock market in January, February of 2000. Only to have it, the whole thing collapse on them in March of 2000.
That's right.
Yeah, the greater fool syndrome, as Mr. Greenspan called it. Washington D.C. is one of those areas where the economy may be hit, the real estate market may be hit a little bit. I don't think it's going to happen in D.C. 20 Tail, right back. We're going to talk about health care after these messages. Stay with us. Back, it's 17 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the small business advocate, and Joan Pride is our guest. And Joan, Kiplinger has an outstanding website, Kiplinger.com, and that's, folks, I use that site all the time. I encourage you to check it out. And Joan, the publications, all of your publications are available to subscribe to them there. The Kiplinger Letters, which is the one we work off of every week, is the weekly flagship. And then you've got three biweeklies, the tax letter, the agriculture letter, and the California letter, the land of the fruits and nuts letter. And then you've got the magazine, Joan.
That's right. It's called Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine.
And it's available in bookstores, newsstands, that kind of thing, but also by subscription. And that 30-day free trial, that's still out there, isn't it, Joan?
You bet.
We like it when people offer us things and we don't have to pay for it unless
we like it when you take them.
That's exactly right. And so check that out at Kiplinger.com. Joan, the healthcare issue is a big deal. One thing that's not in your letter this week, that may be next week, that I want to touch on just a little bit, is it looks like the Senate passed a small business health plan bill yesterday. Do you know about that?
Yes, and I've never really understood what these are. Are these like abilities to pool together?
Remember me talking about AHPs, Association of Health Plans?
Yes.
They now call them small business health plans because that makes it a lot more huggable and lovable.
Well, excuse my naivete, but why did it take so long to pass these things?
Well, because of your buddy Ted Kennedy in the Senate.
The
archenemy of small business, Ted Kennedy. Mm-hmm. And no, the thing is passed 8 times in the House and has been blocked every time in the Senate.
Wow.
But now apparently it's gone through, and so this is really good news, Joan. This is unbelievably good news.
Mm-hmm.
And what it allows people to do, Joan, is it allows groups to band together, chambers of commerce, trade groups to band together, and to offer their members insurance at group rates. So it's very much like the same things that trade unions have the ability to do, and major corporations can do.
Well, what prohibited them from doing it before?
Well, the problem. See, the mechanism that make that's very important here, is the ability to buy across state lines
without
having to be encumbered by the state insurance commission.
I see. Yes.
And see, this is
because
very
the
similar.
States, as we know, regulate insurance.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And see, Joan, have you heard of the individual health plans where somebody they're trying to get it to where someone in New York, where the state insurance commission mandates that every policy will have podiatry and orthodontry and all that kind
right.
of stuff. But maybe Ohio doesn't. You can buy a policy with all that and save a lot of money if you don't need podiatry. Well,
yes.
they're trying to get that across where individuals can buy across state lines. Well, small business health plans is individual health plans writ large.
I see.
Yeah. It's the same concept. The whole thing is to be able to bypass the state insurance commissioners, which typically, I'm not saying they do a bad job. It's just that they don't always serve their constituents the way they should.
Right.
And all small business owners want, Joan, is the ability to have what big companies and unions have.
Right.
And hopefully we have this. And I hope that Senator Kennedy, I don't wish him anything ill, but I wouldn't mind if he had a little bit of indigestion this morning. Just because I know how much he hates this. Okay, and if I had him on the show, I'd tell him we're trying to get him on the show, John. He just won't join us. I think he thinks maybe that I'm going to ask him some hard questions about why he doesn't support small businesses.
Could be.
Yeah, and he's right. Joan, there's another thing though in healthcare, and that's the surcharge for smokers. Tell us about that.
Well, this is kind of interesting. I think these are employers who are adding certain amounts to health care premiums of workers if they or their dependents who are covered by these plans are smokers.
Right. I was talking to some folks who provide insurance through some sophisticated programs that they've come up with something they call right pricing. Mm. And what they mean by right pricing is the people with the exposure pay the bill, not the people without the exposure. In other words, if you smoke, you pay a little more. If you're overweight, you pay a little more.
Oh, right.
And it's called right pricing. And so basically, if you can hire and encourage your people to be healthier, to live a healthier lifestyle, everybody saves money.
Makes sense.
I've had a lot of companies on the show, Joan, over the last couple of years through the Principal Financial Group who brought these companies on, who have explained how they have done things like you're talking about here internally. They got rid of their smoking room and turned it into a exercise room.
Ah.
They pay employees who quit smoking. They give them a little bonus if they quit smoking. And so they've been doing this for years and years. So it can be done, Joan. It can be done internally.
Yeah.
So it's very interesting, but watch. We're gonna keep tracking this small business health plans thing, and hopefully it'll go through real soon.
We'll probably have an opportunity to talk about it next week because I'm guessing that the Kiplinger letter will probably write about it.
I'm sure. I'm sure you will.
Yes.
Illegal aliens is the next topic, John. What about those guys?
Yeah. Now we're talking about this is not the folks from outer space. Now this is this is the immigration problem.
Yeah.
And this is going to be quite a big issue. On the one hand, we say voters are more and more riled up over illegal aliens. But on the other hand, as you know, employers often need them to fill jobs that they can't
Absolutely.
Fill otherwise.
12 million illegals, Joan. I think like 5 or 6
wow.
years ago, it was like 3 million or something. The number
yes.
has just gone up exponentially. 12 million illegals, ladies and gentlemen. What is that? Like, 5%, something like that?
That's huge.
Quick break, 10 till. I'll be right back. We're back at 7 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and my website is www.smallbusinessadvocate.com. I hope you check it out when you get a chance. A lot of good stuff there that'll help you out. Don't forget to subscribe to my free newsletter and check out our blog while you're there. It's not like any other blog you've ever seen before. And Joan, I know you wouldn't expect anything less from me.
You bet.
Check that out at smallbusinessadvocate.com. You can also re-listen over and over again to your little heart's content all the great things that Joan has to say on our show. You can fast forward through my parts and go right to Joan's part.
Hey.
Yeah, you like that, Joan?
Love
We're
it.
Actually going to put a Joan button on there where you can just say, just Joan, just Joan. Joan, I want to go back to this illegal alien thing a minute, these illegal immigrants. One of our top demographic experts says Ken Grumbach says that the reason people are coming across the border is because of the opportunity. They're coming over here to work.
Right.
He's saying that with the Gen Y folks, the under 20 folks, as they're going to be 100 million people. Did you know that? The Gen Y, before they're through, before that generation is done, they're going to be about 100 million, the largest generation in history.
Gee.
He's saying that those people will be taking those jobs because they'll need to do something. And that he thinks that it'll take time, maybe 5 years, maybe 10. But he thinks that the opportunity that these people are coming over for won't be here in 5 or 10 years. That those people won't have anywhere to go in order to have those jobs. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
Right now,
yeah.
Right now the Gen Xers, well, of which there are only about 30 million, there aren't enough of them, plus they don't want those jobs.
Oh, I see.
See? And he's saying the demographic wave may have a big impact on immigration. It was an interesting thought. I never heard anybody say that before.
Yeah.
So just something to think about. Joe, let's move down and talk about business costs. Trucking is going up, right?
Yeah, and I would think this is a big concern for your listeners. We're saying costs rising by 6 to 7% this year, plus diesel fuel surcharges.
Right. Absolutely. And the fuel price is going up. Joan, another thing, if you may not have noticed, but I have in reading articles and listening to some ads on the radio, truck companies are having a hard time getting drivers.
Ooh.
Now, if you're having a hard time getting drivers, then that means that you don't have enough people to deliver the goods, and that's going to have an upward pressure on costs.
Yeah, that makes it even worse.
And go ahead.
Well, I'm just worrying about the security issue, maybe that's part of it.
Exactly. Now I think there. One of the things that I saw in this report was that one of the reasons why they're having trouble getting drivers is because it's a tough lifestyle.
Oh, sure.
And more Americans don't want that lifestyle.
Right.
And so that's one of the things. But one thing that the report did not point out that I think they should have looked into is legal driver's license. You know, you can't drive a truck if you don't have a certified driver's license, a CDL.
Okay.
You got to have a commercial driver's license, not certified, commercial CDL, commercial driver's license. You got to pass a test. You got to study. You got to pass a test. And, of course, you got to have a license yourself, a driver's license.
Right.
There are a lot of people, Joan, in this country who have no license anymore. It's been taken away from them.
Because of driving mishaps?
Yes. Because of driving under the influence.
Right. Oh, true.
DUIs. They've had their license taken from them.
Right.
And the reason I know this is when I had another company a few years ago, if the employment office sent us 10 people, maybe one or two would have a driver's license.
Wow.
So, I mean, a lot of people are driving around this country, Joan, on the roads with no driver's license. They're still driving. These people who had no driver's license, who couldn't show us a driver's license, drove to our business.
Oh, no. That's
so they're driving. Scary. They're driving illegally. Yeah. But you cannot get a commercial driver's license without that license.
I see.
So you got that plus the lifestyle issue.
Mm.
Is making it hard for these companies to get drivers,
right?
And that's contributing. I know to the cost, the increased cost of trucking. So,
makes
folks,
sense.
You might want to pay attention to your freight expenses and see what you can do about that. Joan, AT&T, we got 30 seconds. AT&T is coming back full circle, isn't it?
Yeah. First, they got rid of they were broken up, and now they seem to be coming back together. And we're talking about this because of the new AT&T Bell South merger.
Yeah. 22 years ago, they spun off Bell South.
Yeah, to the baby Bells.
We spun off Southern Bell, which then became Bell South.
Right.
And now they're coming back together, Joan.
Yeah.
What goes around, everything comes around full circle or something
like
that?
I think there were people that thought AT&T would just fade away someday, and
right.
It never did.
Yeah, absolutely. Joan, thank you for being here. Good job today.
Thank you, Jim.
We'll see you next time.
I'll be back.
Joan Pride, ladies and gentlemen, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners. This is Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and this program really is for you. I'll see you later.
Hey,
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.